Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Well, good evening and welcome to USCHO Live from USCHO.com. I'm Ed Trefsker. I'll be joined by Jim Connolly in just a moment. And we're glad to be back with the show for 2015. It's been quite a stretch. Lots of college hockey to talk about, what teams did during the semester break, a lot of tournaments and non-conference play, and, of course, the World Juniors. And we're going to hear about that in the third segment of the program when Dave Starman will be our guest. He was doing ice side reporting on that and some other coverage during the World Juniors. But first, we'll get caught up on college hockey. And Jim, it's good to have you back on the air here, but it was even better that we got to see each other in person out in Minnesota last weekend.
Yeah, I think of all the years that you and I have been working in this game, this is the first time we've actually taken a road trip to the same place together that's not the Frozen Four. So it was nice to be in the Twin Cities, and Minneapolis was a great host, I thought, for the Mariucci Classic. And like you said, it was great catching up on college hockey. So we might as well share with the listeners everything we were talking about in the many nights we were out there in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, where would you like to start?
Well, I can tell you that yeah, we're going to get into it a lot with Dave Starman on World Juniors, but I was pretty disappointed with what the U.S. result was for the second consecutive year, not really putting forward the effort, or maybe just not having the results that a lot of people expected, losing in the quarterfinals for Russia for the second straight year. Obviously, Russia proved themselves in the two games after they beat the U.S., and they obviously beat Sweden and then had a great effort last night against Canada. But I really just think that U.S. team was so packed with talent. It's unbelievable to think that they went out in that quarterfinal round yet again. It just seems that they don't, at least in the last few years, haven't had the ability to win that big game.
Yeah, disappointing. In fact, you and I talked about it not with Mark Osiecki when he was our guest, but really what kind of pressure there was after last year's disappointment. To see it 2 years in a row, you got to wonder if maybe there's going to be not only some reevaluation of how things are coached and how things are planned, but maybe even deeper in the preparation.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can change, and I guess that's one of the things I really want to get into with Dave Starman is what can USA Hockey do? You know, this is one of their big tournaments. Besides the Olympics, I would say that this is the biggest tournament that the U.S. goes through. I don't think the World Championships hold a ton of weight. So until we get into some situation, it was discussed at this year's World Juniors about having some sort of a World Cup of hockey, which had great success back in the 90s when they held it. This is always going to be such an annual priority. So you'd like to see the U.S. have some success. You know, I talked to a couple of coaches while we were out in Minnesota and even trips I had before that, and everybody kind of had the same sentiment. This is a very difficult tournament to win because the talent each year is getting deeper. I mean, we saw Slovakia win their second medal ever in the tournament, their first coming way back in 1999. They take the bronze this year, and you see some very good teams, Sweden, the defending champ, Finland. Russia finishes second. All of these teams can't win it. Only one team was able to win it. But you'd expect at least the United States, with the depth of talent they had, and I really do point to Jack Eichel as the centerpiece of that. He was the captain his second year. He's been having a great season at Boston University. I point to him as kind of the centerpiece, and this might have been his last crack at it. He still will be eligible in terms of age next year, but if he signs with an NHL team, there's a chance they don't let him go back and play the tournament. So I'm not sure if it was hunger, I'm not sure if it was desire, I'm not sure if it was talent or if it was just chemistry, whatever didn't come together. Maybe it's a combination of all of that sort of stuff, and really do look forward to talking to Dave Starman tonight. He'll be in our final segment at 8:40, so he can give us some of his insight as somebody who was there and spent a lot of time around this team over the days. I'm sure it's going to be a lot positive than yours or mine, because I think he probably got to live and breathe what those players and coaches went through. We didn't. We watch it from afar, just having high expectations. So he probably has a better understanding and idea of how difficult it was, but nevertheless, just difficult for, as a fan, as a member of the media, as somebody who just wants USA Hockey to do well, it's hard to watch them fall back-to-back years.
Well, one thing that maybe was a bit of a highlight, and certainly was quite lively on social media, people during the USA-Canada game, folks are saying, wow, this is great hockey. I don't want this game to ever end. And it was very much a college hockey-style game.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think that a lot of the entire tournament was very much a college hockey style game. You had some of the great talents, obviously, on the American team, but there was a lot of systematic play, more so than you might see in the NHL or more, maybe even major juniors. I think that actually last night's championship game between Canada and Russia actually got away from that style of play. I thought it was a very wide open game. Both teams scored in spurts, which I don't think we see too often. And you don't see a team blow or almost blow massive leads that often in college hockey. Where I think in major junior, I've seen some games go 7-6 overtime. And I guess you see some of those in college hockey, but I think they're of the rarity. And last night's championship game, I mean, Canada had, I believe a 2-0 lead within the first 3 minutes. That got closed. They got that lead back up to 5-1. And then by the end of the second period, it was 5-4, and a breakaway was thwarted by a hooking penalty with about 2 seconds left. That goes in. It's 5-5 going into the third, and it might be a different game. Instead, Canada gets that intermission regroup and takes full advantage and comes out and shuts out the Russians in the final period, and they win 5-4. I give all the credit to Team Canada. I thought they played a near-perfect third period, but there were some incredibly tense moments that you don't see that often for a team that has a 4-goal lead.
Well, we'll get into more of that with Dave Starman when he joins us. Turning back to college hockey, it was a time of mixed success for a lot of top teams. And we saw that happen with Minnesota as they dropped a game to Merrimack. In fact, this is the first I'd seen Merrimack in a while and got to see them two different games. And, they played a very successful style of hockey, at least on the first game against Minnesota. They used some of the same tactics that worked most of the game against UMass Lowell. But, quite frankly, it's kind of a dull game of hockey that they play.
I guess you can say dull. It's probably not dull for their goaltender because he saw – I think about it was maybe 87 shots over the two nights. They do surrender a lot of shots. And I don't want to say that that's actually typical. I went back, I was writing my weekly column today, talking a little bit about Merrimack, and I was thinking, boy, they must get outshot like that all the time, because that was the two games that I saw them play this past weekend. And that's not true. Until this weekend, they actually held about a 55-60 shot advantage over their opponents. That has almost all but disappeared after getting outshot by almost identical numbers. I think it was 42-17 one night, and maybe 44-20 the next night. They really got hammered on the shot chart, but they stayed in both games, and they used a couple of good bounces against Minnesota and some great goaltending by Rasmus Tiiranen. And then against Lowell, it looked like it was going that way again until Lowell catches a break, a puck kind of squeaks through Tiranen's glove and allows them to tie it, and then Lowell does what they do well, which is take over a game in the third period. They score two goals in the final, I believe it was 4 minutes of the game. They go on to a victory. But we saw some good hockey out there. I actually thought that even though RIT came out on the wrong end of the consolation game, I thought that that game between Minnesota and RIT was a heck of a game, and that RIT gave that everything that they had and nearly upset Minnesota. Would have been back-to-back tough losses in their own tournament for Minnesota. They don't finish fourth place in that tournament too often. So we saw some great hockey out there this weekend, and that was one of the many great tournaments, I think, that were played over that college holiday break, exam break, whatever you want to call it, the post-break games. Those holiday tournaments are always a lot of fun.
Yeah, some Minnesota fans were getting a little antsy and a little upset. You know, first with a loss, I mean, Minnesota did not play badly against Merrimack. They just couldn't solve the goaltender. And Minnesota didn't play badly against RIT. When you have a goaltender make 46 saves against you, you know, you're doing something right to put 46 shots on net, even if you're pushed to the perimeter. But
one thing about Minnesota, too, is that they rely so heavily on their power play. You know, they have the, I believe it's the number two power play in the country. It's clicking over 30%. And if they don't get sometimes multiple goals on the power play in a game, they played two of the better penalty killing teams in Merrimack and RIT this weekend. So I believe that I saw them strike on the power play in at least one of those two games. I'm not remembering which, because it wasn't my main focus out there. But if they don't get a lot of production from their power play, sometimes their offense can struggle, and that's maybe what the fans get so antsy about, is they're just used to, you know, every 3 out of every 10 times you get a power play, you're going to score. And if you get, 10 power plays over the course of two games, you're going to have a lot of power play goals. So I think that's a little bit of what these fans have been developed and used to this season. And when that doesn't happen, I can see them getting upset.
Well, and it was also an indication to me, again, and we talk about this a lot, and I hear coaches talk about it a lot, how much more parity there is top to bottom in college hockey. You don't have the wide disparity. And we were talking after the game on Friday night, and I think it was your broadcast partner, Bob Ellis, who brought up that you don't have these, or maybe it was you, somebody brought it up, you don't have so many teams, you don't have these national champions with 30-plus wins anymore. Having teams run away with it is not something that's part of the college hockey game any longer.
Yeah, and maybe even if they do run away with it, that single elimination tournament at the end is such an equalizer. And if you can't put those four wins together, and don't forget, we only have to go back less than 15 years when, if you were one of the top teams, you only had to win three games. You got to buy through that first round. Now there's no buy. Everybody is on an equal footing. So as long as you can put yourself into that tournament, whether it's a team that wins on an automatic qualifier with a 15-19 record, or it's a team that nearly runs the slate and is 31-3 coming into the NCAA tournament, you're all in the same position. And sometimes those teams that win their conference tournament, despite being maybe a sixth or a seventh place team during the regular season, they're hot, and yep. That's why I think it makes it very difficult for some of these teams that do have great seasons to go into the NCAA tournament and be in that one game situation. And, it's been rare in the last 10 years to see the number one overall team actually run the table and win the NCAA tournament. It's just very difficult to do.
Well, after a break, the USCHO.com Division I poll came out. And again, three different teams getting the majority of the first-place votes, five different first-place votes. Minnesota Duluth still getting three, even though they finished seventh in the poll. But it must have been tough for the voters. I know it was tough to consider it. North Dakota, BU, and Harvard all kind of split about close to a third of the votes each.
Yeah, and it's kind of strange for those three schools, because the three schools combined played two games that actually counted since the last poll. Boston University tied Union, Harvard beat RPI, that was all this past weekend, and North Dakota hasn't played a single game since the last poll, which is way back in mid-December. So I think it's tough to really look at any of those teams and figure out which one, if you figure it has to be one of those three teams, to figure out which one should be the number one. And then after that, you have to say, hey, has any teams done anything since the break that qualifies? And, you know, Miami goes 3 of 4. They play four times and win 3 of 4. And their one loss was to Notre Dame in a game that they led very late, and Notre Dame tied it late. So that easily could have been four wins in a row. UMass Lowell posts four wins in a row. But now to see them move from number 9 all the way up to, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 is maybe a little bit too much. They did end up moving to the 6th spot. But there's, you know, if some of the teams around BU and North Dakota and Harvard had done a little bit more, Michigan Tech, they started out 5th and they lose 2 games out of 4 that they play. If some of these teams had done more, we can even put Minnesota in there. We might have even seen a more spread out vote. But, you know, the fact of the matter is 6 teams still getting first place votes is a ton. And it just shows that we've reached the halfway point, beyond the halfway point in the season. Every team has played more than their half of their games at this point. We still don't really have a clear idea of which team is number one, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised, because the teams, when they've gotten into the number one spots, have had a very difficult time of hanging on to it. That means they've lost a game, or they maybe have lost 2-3 games since they became number one. So it's I don't think there's a clear cut number one out there for the voters. Our pairwise rankings, which I think are a really good representative of how a team has played to this point in the season, that has Harvard at number one right now, but they only have one loss, and I guess that's a major part of it. There's still a ton of hockey left to be played, so we I love polls, and I know you do as well. We have to be careful how much we put into believing these polls at this point.
Well, you mentioned the pairwise rankings, and the further along you get in the season, the more it shows a picture of who's in line for the NCAA tournament. ECAC did well out of conference. WCHA did well out of conference, and NCHC did. And that helps those teams where they end up in the RPI and then in the pairwise rankings. Michigan Tech losing to Wisconsin hurt them a bit. That is going to diminish a bit as you get through the rest of the season when it's mostly in conference play. But like we saw last year, the leagues that had the best out-of-conference schedule are the ones who put the most teams in at large in the NCAA tournament. And most of that play is already behind. So teams are going to have to maybe dig themselves out of a hole with their own play in order to look for an at-large.
Yeah, and it's something I'm going to talk about in my column that comes out this Thursday. You know, it's dealing with Hockey East, but one of the leagues you didn't mention there was Hockey East, and they had an abysmal start, and heading into the break were 5-19 winning percentage out of conference. I believe that put them 4th at the time. Well, mm-hmm. Over those 2 weeks, they played a few games against one another, obviously Merrimack playing Lowell. I think Providence played Vermont. I think Providence played somebody else. There was 4 games anyways that were conference games against Hockey's team, so that you're automatically going to get a win and a loss or 2 ties out of that. But the other games, there were 20 games otherwise, and Hockey's went 15-3-2 in those games. So they actually raised their winning percentage in interconference play from 0.519 to 0.577. And if you've looked, Hockey East teams have begun rising in their pairwise a little bit more. You now have 5 teams in the top 16, and it really is a direct correlation between how your conference has done against its non-conference opponents. And I'm not talking about non-conference games, because like I said, sometimes you play Hockey East teams in those games, but it's the non-conference opponents that are just so important. And it was an abysmal start for Hockey East. They've righted the ship a little bit more. They have a lot of games coming up in really the next 2 weekends, because after that it's the bean pot, which is not much. Really only 2 games in the bean pot that matter. So Hockey East teams have saved themselves a little bit, and I think you can look at some of the other leagues have started to take a little bit of a drop down, ECAC being one of them. NCHC still continues to really hold on to that top spot in the interconference rankings. And there has been a little bit of translation when you look at the pairwise. So, as you said, however you do in your intra-conference schedule, your games against other conferences, generally can align you into where your conference is going to be at the end of the season.
Well, we'll see that develop. Perhaps we'll even get a chance to talk to our resident bracketologist, Jason Moy, as the season goes on, because I know he looks at a lot of that stuff, too. But right now, I think it's time for us to take a break. Our first guest tonight will be on when we come back, and that's legendary Boston College head coach Jerry York. And we'll join in conversation with him when USCHO Live continues right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trepsker along with Jim Connolly.
And we are joined now by, I guess you have to just say, a legend of college hockey, the all-time winningest coach in college hockey, and a man who at Boston College has won 4 national titles, 5 overall when you throw one in at Bowling Green, and that's Jerry York. Jerry, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, right back at you, Jim. Happy New Year to you, and let's have a unbelievable second half of college hockey in the 15th year.
Well, it's been pretty good to this point, and I'll start right away with a tournament that your team played last weekend up at Dartmouth. You came away the winner, and you overcame a little bit of adversity in that one when you look at the fact that for both games you were without your goaltender, Thatcher Demko, who was at World Juniors. He did come back, I guess, for the second game, but had probably been worn out by that point. But you also, the first night, missing a few key players up front as well. Talk about that adversity and how your team handled it, and you know what they were able to accomplish in winning those two games up at Dartmouth.
You know, it was an interesting tournament. We had a banquet to start the tournament, Jim, and we've got a little time to talk tonight, so we have a tangent here, but we talked about the 4 teams there, and each coach spoke, and I said, hey, right now I think college hockey is at its zenith, Jim, you know, as far as national recognition, our tournaments, just the campuses, they were just alive with college hockey. And I said, you know, the 4 teams here all had coaches that we benefited from. You know, Murray Armstrong at Denver won, you know, a whole bunch of national championships and, you know, really brought college hockey at that point in the 60s, late 50s, 60s, and you know, at Brown, Jim Fulton was doing some incredible imparting the college hockey as far as coaching and raising up our whole level. And of course, Dartmouth had Eddie Jeremiah, and he was probably the first college coach that wrote a book on hockey that's been well-documented as one of the finest ever written. And of course, we had Snooks Kelly at Boston College. So I said all of us are benefits of these people there. So it was kind of great to have those four programs at the Hanover Inn at the banquet, and Dartmouth did an outstanding job hosting the tournament. But as far as our team was concerned, a guy stepped in. Brad Barone hasn't played a heck of a lot in goal and really had two outstanding games back-to-back. Players like Travis Jake and Peter McMullen, who had not played all year, stepped in and played. But what a boost we got from Montreal, and the players called and said, hey, we want to play, coach. We got to get down there, but we don't have any equipment. How can we do this? And, of course, Mike Ayers was up in Montreal as one of the staff assistants with the USA team. Well, he volunteered to drive to Boston, pick up all the equipment, and drive it back to Dartmouth the next morning. And then some of the parents put the players, rented cars, put the players in the car and drove to Hanover. So at 4:15, we were still not sure of our lineup. And all of a sudden, here comes Ian McCaution, Noah Hannafin, and Alex Tuck. And Thatcher would have played, but he had a little pull in one of his muscles. He said, I better not do it. And but it was a great – I almost got the cavalry coming in to help us there. And so it was fun to see the kids. I knew they were tired, and I knew they were disappointed in not making the medal round. But, hey, we want to play for the Eagles. And the whole team got excited about that.
It sounds like an episode of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles right there with moving parts
yeah.
and all of that stuff. You talked about World Juniors, and before I get too much into your team, I want to talk a little bit about the benefit of that tournament to your players. You know, I got to see a number of the games, and Alex Tuck, who's been one of your best freshmen this year, he seemed to really fit into that team, and his talent level really shined through. And you mentioned Hannafin. And McCaution on D, and I think sometimes it's hard to see D stand out, especially on TV. But Thatcher Demko in net, and I had a coach remark to me that he thought of watching one of the games, and I think it might have been the Canada game, he thought that he had never seen Thatcher have a game that solid in his entire career. He thought that he was the only reason the U.S. was even in that Canada game. I'm sure you saw a little bit of it and have talked about to these kids, but can you just talk about how they performed at that tournament and what this tournament really does for these kids in terms of maturing them and making them better college hockey players?
Well, first of all, I texted with Marco Siki today, and we were within an eyelash of getting into the medal round, and who knows, any of them might have a chance to win a gold. But I said to Mark, the player you missed the most was Steve Santini. I think that physical player, that type of leader that Steve is, if we had added him to our team, and, unfortunately his wrist didn't heal in time. So, but I thought that all the players over the years that I've had go to the World Juniors, it's a refreshing for them. Our alumni get all upset, and our students, hey, we have a tournament in the middle of the year, and guys are missing key college games. But I think what happens is that we historically have young players at BC, so the freshmen are 18. Some were just turning 18 as they came in, like, say, Noah Hannafin. But for them to play against older players, more mature players in our league, hey, it's difficult. It's similar to if you were in Little League, to move up to Babe Ruth League, when you're still eligible for Little League, and the kids are bigger, stronger, they throw the ball quicker. And so it's difficult for our young players to really shine, in the type of environment we have in Hockey East. And sometimes they lose their confidence a little bit. So when they go back to their own age group and play among, their peer group throughout the world, then they're more comfortable and they really get confidence back. So when they come back to us, I think it's almost like the young Pastrnak, the Bruins player. He's been in the AHL, he's been in the NHL, and he gets a chance to go back to Montreal and play his own age group. It helps him an awful lot. So I think that's when you measure yourself against your own age group, I think it's way better for our guys. And the benefits far outweigh the fact that they've played seven or eight games or nine games in 12 days and maybe a little bit tired emotionally and physically, but in the long run, I think it's a great, great thing that we're doing. And I feel very, very confident that our players come back as better players.
We're speaking with Boston College head coach Jerry York. Jerry is somebody who played college hockey in the mid-60s and has been coaching as a head coach since 72. It was interesting when you mentioned the legendary names and talked about this being the zenith of college hockey. I know our friends at College Hockey Inc. point out that 30% of the NHL now has come from the college ranks. What are your thoughts on what you've seen over the decades in how the players play today, the level of the game, even the quality of the 59 teams that are part of Division One now?
Well, I just measure it when I said zenith. Not just how many players we have going on to the pros, and certainly that's a byproduct of what's happening. But I just think the interest on college campuses, the TV now, our teams know, and our students and our alumni know all about WCHA and the National Hockey Conference and the Big Ten, and it's just the ECAC. It's just more popular. Basketball and hockey, when I was playing in the 60s and starting to coach in the early 70s, we were distant, way back as far as national publicity and the importance of on our college campuses, even though it was important. But right now it's, we're record-breaking crowds, our national tournaments playing in, NHL buildings, and not only playing them but filling them up. So sometimes you look forward, but you got to remember your past, and those particular coaches from those four schools were instrumental in what's happening now. But I love the way that the college game's going. I think that expansion, I'm so excited that Arizona State now is, pledged to become a Division I school like Penn State did. And hey, maybe that triggers University of Arizona to play. And Penn State might trigger Northwestern to get another college program. So I really like the direction we're going. And we can't be more excited about our league, Hockey East, but, you can't just have one league. Football has the five power conferences, and you need a strong Southeast Conference. We need a strong Pac-12, and, we need the ECAC to be really strong, maybe a little too strong now with back-to-back national championships. But I think it helps when it's, a National Hockey Conference in Denver and Colorado and Miami are playing, it helps all of us. So I think right now I'm coaching at the pinnacle of college hockey as far as national interest and youth hockey interest. And when you turn on NHL games, like you're talking about College Hockey Inc., we've got tons of players playing, not just fourth liners, but, top guys.
Well, Jerry, the point you make there, you can almost, and I know you have no problem waving the flag for Hockey East, but Hockey East probably feels a little bit like a microcosm of that national picture where there's been a little bit of expansion. You've had different faces, different teams near the top, at the top over the last few years. It was such it almost became a doldrums, and I know BC probably had no problem being part of the BC, BU, UNH, Maine top four that existed there. But this league, I think the interest in the league, it seems building to building, you see better crowds now, knowing that there are different faces and that almost any team on any night has a chance to win.
Oh, I think our balance is terrific. And, we've always said our top teams are always going to play anybody else's top teams. But you take our bottom seven teams or bottom eight teams even, and put them in a tournament against any other league, I feel very strongly that would be in favor of Hockey East. So, we've always had the top teams, but now our depth in our league is incredible. And But we're only as good as the other leagues. And we need college hockey to be vibrant in all the leagues we have. And I think that's when I look around and watch other games and see, hey, I'm excited about the growth of college hockey and particularly, how strong our Hockey East League is getting.
We're talking with Boston College head coach Jerry York. And Jerry, let's talk a little bit about your season. And you're at a kind of a unique place this year, where you had some key losses, obviously, but you lost an entire line that was arguably one of the best lines that college hockey has seen in a very, very, very long time. How have the replacements, and I know it's sometimes hard to replace great offense, but how have the guys stepped up, and what role players have had to move up, and how has that made it a challenge for you this year?
Well, I certainly think each year is different, you know, and you lose Brian Johnson, it's like, geez, how are we ever going to move forward? And all of a sudden, you know, you got Cam Atkinson, and you say, oh, boy, Cam leaves. Where's our offense? You know, it's Nathan Gerby there. So each year, you know, other players are going to step up. And this particular year, you know, we've got some really good young players, freshmen and sophomores, that I think are going to be, as the season progresses, and I see it on a daily basis, you know, they're going to improve and they're going to be able to, you know, do some things that excite all our fan base and people that really follow college hockey. But I think right now the biggest surprise I've had is our senior class. I think there are, you know, Michael Sid and Quinn Smith and Destry Strait. You know, they've all been kind of role players for us as we go through our lineup. But now they're instrumental in there. I think they're bringing along our young guys very, very well. Our team is, you know, much sounder defensively. I think from the blue line back, you know, we've got, even though they're young kids, we've got some of the best defensemen I've had a chance to coach in a long time. And certainly Thatcher ranks with Clemenson and Schneider. So I think our ability to win games late in the year, probably going to be those 3-2 games, 2-1 games where we're very tight defensively and opportunistic offensively. But down the road, I can see Ryan Fitzgerald and Zach Sanford and Alex Tuck and Adam Gilmore, these type of players really stepping up offensively. But as of now, we're going to have to win those. You know, if we're going to win the game, we don't want that 7-5 game. I think the 2-1 game favors our club. So it's promising, but, you know, we've got some really good clubs. So you look at some of the teams, the Hockey East, that, you know, we try to gain ground on, and they don't give up ground very easily. So hopefully we keep improving each day, and I think our team will be pretty legitimate when we get to March and April.
Well, you're going to face an opponent this weekend that probably, if you face them in October or November, it would be a bit of a different team, and that's Northeastern. I believe they're 5-1-1 in their last seven games. They've turned things around after an awful start, an 0-8-1 start. This has become a kind of a nice little rival for BC. Even when Northeastern hasn't been an up year, they've still provided some headaches for your team. Talk a little bit about what you expect from the Huskies.
Well, not many teams haven't provided some headaches for us, Jim. We always have some outstanding rivalries. You know, BU is always going to be our chief rival, but you look around the league, we've developed some great rivalries. And now, also, they bring Notre Dame in, which has certainly been a national rival of ours for years now within our league. But, you know, the Beanpot schools historically have always generated more interest when we played. I think Northeastern, you know, Jimmy's club and my club are pretty similar, is that we started out slow and, you know, we were losing games and kind of looked a ways off. But over the last month or so, both of us have started to rise a little bit and playing better. So you got two good teams now that maybe you couldn't use that word good a month ago, a month and a half ago with our clubs. But right now I think we're both pretty good clubs, and now it's, looks like a great battle. Friday night, you know, one of those classic Coleman-Holmes series. And then the Pats had to jump in there and play on Saturday. So that's going to be interesting how we'll draw on Saturday. But we're at Northeastern Friday at 7 and right back at 4 o'clock at Kelly Rink. So this will be a big 4 points for both of us.
Well, it should be a great series, as you mentioned. Kicks off Friday at a historic Matthews Arena. That's a 7 o'clock game time. And then if you choose in New England not to watch the Pats, you can always tune in to Nesson or just show up at Kelly Rink, which I think is what you, Coach York, would prefer, is to have a nice packed house when you have a nice little down the street rival in. But, Jerry, we wish you the best of luck in the second half. Really appreciate your time tonight, and we will see you through the rinks through the second half of the year.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Thanks, Jim. And we think your show has been really good for college hockey, so keep up the good work, huh?
Well, thank you, Coach.
That's Jerry York, and we'll be back with hockey analyst Dave Starman right after this when USCHO Live continues.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah,
yeah.
So obvious.
Oh, hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back here on January 6th, 2015. Boy, I've jumped 2 years here. January 6th, 2015 episode of USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Connolly.
I think you should maybe avoid dates from now on. You are struggling with that one right there.
I wonder what I'm writing on my checks.
Yeah, we're going to bring in a guy who for the last couple of weeks was all over the place of Canada with the U.S. World Junior team working for NHL Network. And this weekend he'll kick off some of his great work that he does with CBS Sports Network, and that is one of our favorite guys, Dave Starman. Dave, welcome. Happy New Year, and welcome back to the U.S.
Thanks. Happy New Year, boys. How are we?
We're doing great. I think better than the folks at USA Hockey are after another quarterfinal exit to Team Russia. Take us through a little bit just on you had the closeness to this team. Obviously, disappointment is probably the right word, but the mentality of USA Hockey and this team coming out of that tournament.
I think last year coming off the gold medal, they lose in the quarterfinals to the Russians in Malmo, Sweden, and you can say to yourself, okay, you know, last year was our year, and maybe this year wasn't, and you get a pass as the defending champ. I think this year hurt them a little bit more, and, you know, when you look at the tournament and you look at the opening game against the Finns, I mean, I thought they played okay against the Finns, but you know, on the other hand, it probably exposed a little bit, and they had some good scoring chances, didn't bury a ton of them, ended up winning in a shootout. And I thought to myself after that game was going to be a bigger asset to them than anything else, because I'm a big believer in if you can play a really hard game first, it generally helps you out for the rest of the tournament because you're a little bit more battle-tested. And I think we saw that in 10 when they won the gold medal and in 13 when they won the gold medal. They had some really hard medal round, some preliminary games, and it helped them in the long run. But the finish game, I don't think, woke them up as much as I thought that it was going to. The Germany and Slovakia games, you know, I thought they probably had to work a little bit harder than I expected them to win these games, but they played fairly well. And, you know, then they got to the Canada game, and that didn't go their way. But the funny part about it is when you look at the Canada game, each team scored 3 goals against the goalie in the net. 2 of Canada's goals in that 5-4 win were empty netters. You know, it was 4-2 and then 4-3 and then another empty net goal. And you know, then they get to the Russia game, and despite a number of chances, you know, they didn't get a couple of bounces, and the Russians did get a bounce on that crazy third goal that turned out to be the game winner. But, you know, I think when you look up and down this roster, there are some guys that I thought stood out, and then there are some guys I thought that didn't, and square in the middle of that is Jack Eichel. And this was a tournament where, you know, I kind of anticipated Eichel being better than he was. And, you know, I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was great. I thought he tried to take the puck into traffic a ton, which is what he should be doing, and didn't find a whole lot of success. And I'm not sure if it was the pressure that was on him. I'm not sure if it was teams focusing more on him. My personal feeling is I think it sticks a little too long, and it gets him into trouble when he tries to dangle. But, you know, Eichel was not the best player on Team USA, and I think for them to win, he needed to be.
Yeah, and you know, that you kind of steal my next question, was, you know, I wanted to ask why, if there was a real reason with Jack Eichel, and I guess there's no easy way to sum it up, but, you know, the conversation's always there, major junior versus college, and I know you and I both have some great proponencies for college hockey. But then you watched Canada last night, and all these kids are from major junior. I felt like some of the talented players who were supposed to be the talented players, they all stood out for the most part. Was there anything that relates back to college that is a negative for Eichel? Maybe that he doesn't play tough enough competition on a night-in, night-out basis? Or do you think it might just be more of a player thing that he just didn't have a good couple of weeks?
You know what? It's funny. You can answer that question in three parts, because in 2010 and 2013, and even 2011 when they won the bronze, 2011 when they won the bronze, there were a ton of college guys on those teams, and those college guys beat a ton of the major junior guys, either from Canada or wherever. So I mean, I think that, you know, when it comes to the college versus major junior thing, you know, everybody's going to certainly make comparisons, but I'm not sure they pull out apply in this situation. But I think the thing with Eichel is this: you know, he's used to playing against teams where you're looking at 2 pretty good lines and a couple of pretty good defense, and if you get matched up against, you know, a bottom 6 group or a bottom 2 defense pairing, you're going to have some success. And he's just that much better than a lot of even the elite players that he's playing against in the NCAA. For the first time, I think, you know, in close to a year, he wound up playing against teams that were deep. You know, the Finns, they didn't score much, but they were deep. They, you know, 4 lines deep, they battled. The Canadians, 4 lines deep and 3 sets of D, they battled, and they were pretty darn good. The Russians, same deal. You know, you go through their entire lineup, and there was not a lot of holes. And, you know, when you're one guy and you're playing against 19 skaters or 20 skaters that you can dress in international play, you know, you're playing against a lot of guys that can play really well and have established themselves as pretty good players at their level. So, you know, I think that's a factor in it. And the other thing is, you know, Eichel had a bullseye on his back from the beginning of the tournament. And, you know, if this tournament's in the U.S., if this tournament's in Buffalo or Minneapolis or Detroit, you know, I don't know how much of the pressure he feels with that 1 pick versus number 2 pick when it comes to Connor McDavid. Now, McDavid playing in the OHL, I guarantee he gets that question on a daily basis. And Jack does too, but I don't think with the same kind of pressure as McDavid is feeling as a Canadian kid playing, you know, in major junior, and then playing the World Junior Tournament in Montreal and Toronto, the 2 biggest cities in the country. I think he is just getting a little bit more used to it than Eichel is, and I think the pressure might have just worn Eichel down. That's my theory. But on the other hand, I think everybody on every team said, this guy might be the number 1 pick in the draft. We're going to stop him, and they did.
We're talking with Dave Starman. He was just at the World Junior Tournament as part of the NHL Network crew. Generally, one of the great analysts with CBS Sports Network. You talked about some of the players who did have good tournaments, and the first name for me as a guy who I thought stood out was Dylan Larkin, 5 goals, 7 points in 5 games. It was a +7. Hudson Fashing, another guy who Ed and I were just at Minnesota this weekend, and everybody was saying, oh, it's nice to see him do something at World Juniors because he hasn't done a lot for us all year here at Minnesota. But he was another +7 with a goal and a couple of assists, and I thought he kind of stood out. Were those the guys in your head that stood out, and maybe did I miss anybody on that team that really had the tournament that maybe not everybody was expecting them to have?
I think you're bang on when it comes to Larkin and when it comes to Fashing, and you're right, Fashing didn't have a great first half at the U, and I think this World Junior Tournament might have been the best thing that ever happened for him. Now, he played a different role in the World Junior Tournament than he did at Minnesota. I think they rely on his skill level a little bit more with the Gophers. With this tournament, they relied on his big body, and they relied on him to kind of get space for Larkin and Milano if they move Milano onto the wing on that line at times. So, I mean, the roles were different, and I think Fashing played his role fantastically, much like he did last year when he played with Andrew Kopp and Stefan Matteau. And, you know, they were a great third line hunting down pucks and getting space and going to the front of the net. So you're right there. Dylan Larkin is special. I mean, he's a special player. He's a special kid, too. I mean, he's a stand-up guy. And, you know, Eichel's a great stand-up guy there, too. I mean, he faced the music and did well with it. But, you know, Larkin just stood out. And I thought what Larkin said to me prior to the Russia game kind of summarizes who he is, and that is, he said, I don't want to be a pool play superstar. You know, I want to play well in this game against Russia because these are the games that matter. And I thought he played fairly well in that game. He just didn't have the success he had in other games. But, you know, Larkin stood out. Fashing stood out. I'll give you a couple of guys that flew under the radar. Brandon Carlo, one of the defensemen, and I thought Ryan Collins from the University of Minnesota, both were real good in the roles that they played. I thought Will Butcher was terrific. I thought Ian McCaution took a huge step from where he was last year to this year. I really liked the way Tyler Mott played. He did his job. He did what he had to do. He was physical. He went to the net. He created space. I mean, he was another guy that I thought had a pretty good tournament. This kid, Anthony D'Angelo, with his feet, he can get himself into trouble and out of it just as fast. Real good stick. Great offensive flair. I kind of liked his game. And, you know, on a smaller level, you know, Chase DeLeo didn't have a great tournament. He wasn't one of the dominant players in his tournament, but Chase DeLeo, and I said it on the air, reminds me of Tyler Johnson. And if he keeps following the path that he's on right now, Chase DeLeo, I think, is going to play in the NHL.
We're speaking with Dave Starman. And, Dave, you're going to get things going this weekend on CBS Sports Network with the coverage of college hockey. 2 great games and 2 legendary arenas. Notre Dame at Western Michigan, Lawson Ice Arena, and Engelstad Arena has Minnesota Duluth coming in to see North Dakota. Going back over the dozen years that you've been involved with what is now CBS Sports Network, I kind of want to reference something Jerry York said, and far be it from us to disagree with Jerry, but he talked about this being now the zenith and then later the pinnacle of college hockey. And even going back a dozen years, I'm sure you've seen a change, but what's your assessment on the college hockey game now and where it's going? I mean, are we really at the zenith? I mean, and do we have a whole lot of upside left to go?
I think there is a lot of upside to go, and I think that the coaching right now at the college level is as good as it's ever been. And, you know, when you look at all the programs, when I looked at these programs 12 years ago and I look at the programs now, I think there's more guys that are career coaches that are in it to be coaches because they want to develop players and make programs better and possibly even get to the next level, as opposed to 12 years ago when I thought there were a lot of coaches that were just kind of doing the job because it was a job that they could do. So on that note, I think it's been so much better. And you look at some of the young coaches that have come in that have done great jobs, and then you look at some of the veterans, you know, the Jeff Jacksons of the world, the Jerry Yorks of the world, you know, the guys that have been around for a while, Red Berenson, you know, certainly still a viable guy at the University of Michigan. So, you know, the old guard is kind of getting it done, but, you know, you look at some of the younger guys, you know, Normie Bazin at UMass Lowell. I mean, look at the unbelievable job that he has done. I mean, it's just been fantastic what he's been able to do at UMass Lowell. I mean, they are a really good, viable team again. You know, I think Casey Jones has done a nice job at Clarkson, you know, in terms of rebuilding that program. Look what Rand Pecknold's doing at Quinnipiac. Look what Keith Delaney's doing at Yale. So I just think that, you know, there are coaches out there that have really elevated their programs. And I know I'm missing a few too, but I mean, there are just coaches that I think have elevated their programs. And, you know, to me, with the college route, I still think that when you come out of college hockey, you're a much more complete player than anywhere else that you could possibly play your amateur hockey. So on that level, are we at the zenith of college hockey? I don't think so. I think it can get better. But on the other hand, I do think that college hockey is challenged by the fact that a lot of high-end guys, instead of playing their 19-year-old year in the NCAA, are jumping a major junior and trying to fast track through that 1 year into pro hockey. So, I mean, that to me is the biggest challenge they face, because I think are a lot of really good players are bypassing the college route for that quick route to the NHL. And for some of them, it's been successful. But to me, that would be my biggest concern.
Yeah, that does seem to be the number one concern these days in the college game. Dave Starman, CBS Sports Network, you're going to be kicking off your season Notre Dame at Western Michigan Friday, Minnesota Duluth, North Dakota on Saturday. Enjoy the games this weekend and throughout the second half of the season. And if it's okay, we'll catch up with you hopefully toward the end of the season, talk a little bit about what you've seen and your thoughts toward the end of the year.
Well, thanks for having me anytime, and I guarantee you that Sheree and Sasky and I are the only two people in America flying from Kalamazoo to Grand Forks on Saturday.
Oh, I'm jealous.
I believe
if
that
I wasn't
going to
be at
true.
A game myself, I'd pack myself in your luggage.
You got it.
That's Dave Starman. You can catch him and Sheree and Sasky and the gang on CBS Sports Network this weekend. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this week's edition of USCHO Live here from USCHO.com.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at USCHO.com. This is USCHO Live.
And we're back with USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Connolly, and we're talking with Dave Starman, CBS Sports Network, with a couple of games on TV. I was looking at our weekend schedule, and USCHO lists two dozen games that are televised, and just looking at the TV schedule where I live, it looks like there are about 10 or 11 games over the course of the weekend that I would be able to watch live. It is really incredible how the sport has grown and how the coverage has grown. CFTV, the predecessor to CBS Sports Network, Dave Starman, part of that a dozen years ago, really has gotten the ball rolling with national coverage, national televised regular season games in college hockey, and it's really great how it's spread.
Yeah, and it's a big deal now that almost every league wants to sign some sort of a national deal, and every league in some way or shape or form has games nationally televised through at some point in the season. So I think that you're right. I think that CSTV, when they kind of established themselves and before they sold to CBS Sports, or College Sports, and it became CBS Sports Network, they just did a great job of getting this game on a national scale, and it's just been so beneficial to everybody involved.
And international, too, 40 games now. It looks like the schedule is going to be on TSN, too, so our friends north of the border will get to take in some great college hockey as well, and certainly with a lot of interest with so many Canadian players in the U.S. game.
And hopefully that helps sell the game above the border, too. The guys get to see the quality of the product. Especially these young kids when they're 15, 16 years old, if they're kind of getting hooked on some of these college hockey games, maybe that choice between college and major junior, which seems so easy for Canadians to stay up there and play in the CHL, might be a little bit more difficult, and they want to at least explore that NCAA route.
Well, let's take a look at some key games this weekend that are coming up. A couple of great series in the NCHC, four ranked teams. Now the new number one North Dakota hosting Minnesota Duluth, and number 13 Omaha with number 10 Denver. Both great series.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that one. I think that's going to be two really bang up games that were or four games, the two games in each that we're going to see. And we can't even discount the way, you know, St. Cloud might not be on the up here, but we know that they're a darn good team. And number five, Miami's headed to St. Cloud for two. So NCHC might have by far the best games this weekend. I certainly like all three of those series and would be very interested in seeing all three of them.
And an interesting one at Madison Square Garden. And it's interesting that they're both ranked teams this week, number 3 Harvard and number 19 Yale. Of course, a rivalry that goes back before Jerry York's great-grandparents were born at Madison Square Garden on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, more than 100 years in hockey, and football is well beyond that in terms of this great rivalry. And to put this game onto such a great scale and put it into Madison Square Garden, and from what I understand, they expect to have a capacity crowd down there. The fact that both of these teams are both going to be ranked for the first time that they've played one another in quite some time. It's always seemed that when one's been up, the other's been down. Harvard having obviously an unbelievable year, and that's going to be a very tough opponent in Yale. So I wish that is one game that I wish was televised that is not. But those two teams, if you're in the New York area, can get your hands on tickets, go see that game. That should be a really physical series, physical game. It's a single game, an emotional game between these two teams. And if it's a packed house at Madison Square Garden, the atmosphere is promised to be absolutely unreal.
Lots of other great games going on, none really with ranked teams, but it's fun to see, like, for instance, the Big Ten getting into action, Ohio State and Penn State, Minnesota and Michigan. Those will be great series no matter what. A few others here and there. I'm really fascinated after seeing Lowell a couple of times and seeing what an upstart UConn is, a game on Saturday at XL Center in Hartford. Should be a great one as well.
These two teams just played 2 weeks ago in the finals of the Frozen Holiday Classic down in Bridgeport. And that was one of Lowell's, I see Lowell all the time as the radio guy, but that was one of their toughest games of the year. That and the Merrimack game, those two championship games really rivaled one another in terms of the intensity, and I believe they both ended in the same score of 3-1. Lowell had a really hard time generating offense against UConn, and UConn was able to get their chances. I think they finished with 30 shots on goal in that game against Lowell. But I think that despite the fact that Lowell is ranked 6th and UConn is a below 500 team in league, they're playing good enough hockey now. It's almost like what Jerry York was saying about Northeastern, that it might have been a slow start, but we know they're a good team now. Lowell's saying the same thing about Connecticut, and they know it from experience because they played them just 2 weeks ago.
Well, and there you go, two young coaches taking on each other. As Dave Starman talking about the great talent behind the bench. Well, Jim, that's going to wrap things up at this point for this first edition of USCHO Live for 2015. We'll be back next Tuesday night with another episode. And if you've missed any of this, of course, you can subscribe to the podcast. And quite frankly, the bulk of people listen to it on demand via the podcast during the week. And if you're listening in that way, we're glad you tuned in as well.
Should be another great week of college hockey. I look forward to being back here next Tuesday, Ed.
All right, and so we'll wrap it up there. For Jim Connolly, I'm Ed Trefsker, and we'll catch you next time on USCHO Live.